This.
What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mask.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
I just want to see what the fuss is about.
The Sports Hub.
I'll probably hate it.
Christopher Gasper of the Boston Globe in our Tom Furt Tire Studios. Do you agree with Stephen A. Smith or disagree?
I actually agree with him, and I'll take it to football. Whenever there's any discussion about Montana and Brady, everybody mentions the fact that Montana never lost the Super Bowl. But what about the times he got eliminated before the Super Bowl? How is that better? But for some reason, for the purpose of the argument, when you're talking about all-time greats, it's better to get eliminated before you get to the championship than to lose it. And with this bunch of guys, even if they somehow miraculously pull this off against the Celtics, I'm not sure people will remember that. I think they will remember that they got eviscerated by Golden State in all likelihood. So I think Stephen A's right. I mean, from a legacy standpoint, it's probably better for LeBron to lose this series.
So you think the shutdown factor is on the table?
I think it's a factor, and it's on the table not because of what Stephen A's saying. I'm not sure that factors in with LeBron, but I think it's something we've seen. You know, I heard a number of people say, you know, if Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, those guys would go down shooting. I remember Kobe Bryant. There were years when he had nothing around him, like in that Phoenix series, and he quit. He's like, nah, these guys can't get it done.
I've never put Kobe on that list.
No, me neither. Kobe will quit. Jordan's a little different.
Yeah, I think it was. I believe it was definitely on ESPN. I believe it was sort of during the broadcast that comment was made.
Oh, definitely, I think Jackson said when LeBron wasn't really shooting in the second half, he said something to the effect of, if this were Michael, this were Kobe, they'd go down shooting.
Yes.
They'd go down gunning or something like
yes.
that.
Yes, and so I disagree with that. So my point is, LeBron's 33 years old. There's only so many bullets left in the gun, right? Do you want to waste them on this team? Is that what you want to do?
And this series, just to get your face pushed in against Golden State?
The Herculean task of trying to drag this team through this series? Or do you want to sort of conserve a little bit? I do think there will be an element of him looking around and saying these guys aren't good enough. And you saw it even in 2010 when it was Antoine Jameson and Mo Williams turning into an absolute puddle at TD Garden.
Yeah, you saw it.
There was an element with LeBron of, I don't like to say that it's quitting, because I don't feel, it's resignation. I think there's like an element of resignation there where it's like, I'm not going to try and throw on the cape and go above and beyond here to drag these guys through this. I'm going to play hard. I'm going to do what I can do, but I'm not going to try to pull a Superman act here because it's probably not going to work and it's not worth it.
Chris, what else stands out to you in this series so far?
I think when I look at it, what stands out to me the most is if you're the Celtics and you're looking at this, doesn't it change the way you approach the offseason? You know, Jimmy and I were just talking before I came on. I feel like now they sort of owe it to themselves to see what it looks like when you have everybody. When it's Tatum and Brown with Irving and Hayward and Al. And maybe see if your five can be Golden State's four. I still think it would be tough, but you're better positioned than anybody else.
You say four. So is Iguodala five? Or is Draymond Green five?
What do you mean?
Well, who's four? I mean, well, how
I'm saying Clay, Steph, Durant, Draymond.
So Iguodala doesn't count on your five?
No. I'm talking about stars.
Yeah, so
star potential.
So Al Horford counts with the Celtics five, but Iguodala does not count on the...
Well, Al Horford's a five-time All-Star.
Well, I'm asking. You know more than I do. So you're saying Iguodala is really just a spare piece.
No. I mean, he's a good player, but I wouldn't put him on the same level as like star-type guys. And look, Tatum and Brown aren't there yet, but I think they've sort of hit the fast-forward button. So I think you owe it to yourself to see what those guys can do based on what they've done so far.
It is interesting. I mean, because the value of those two guys has gone up a lot. But if you tell me that Karl Anthony Towns is in play,
well, that's different.
So okay, thank you. I'm glad you said that, because Brian Windhorst said
or
today,
Anthony Davis.
So thank you. Windhorst said today on the Zach Lowe podcast that he guesses the Celts are standing pat unless Karl Anthony Towns might be someone that they would look at. And he said there's issues in Minnesota where Karl Anthony Towns might be available. So Karl Anthony Towns or Anthony Davis, you would still move one of those pieces.
I still would do that. Yeah. Yeah, because that's a guy that's that talented and is a big, and that changes the equation. But now I'm off the Kawhi train at this point.
You are.
I am, and I was on it before. I mean, I fully admit to flip-flopping, but now, again, I hope it's not sentimentality creeping in, but just watching it and looking at, and also factoring in salary cap ramifications, I feel like they kind of owe it to themselves unless you're getting a Karl Anthony Towns or an Anthony Davis. And by the way, that's a very narrow category of young, transcendent big man. Like, there's not, that's pretty much it. you sort of owe it to yourself to see how it plays out with these guys if you can get it done.
I mean, the likelihood is that they're going to come back with the same team, the same core anyway, because they don't have a high draft pick to deal. I mean, unless they want to deal the one next year.
Sacramento's pick.
Okay, but even that one, there's some uncertainty tied to it. And you would have to, in all probability, take someone away from this core if you're going to make a huge deal. It wouldn't surprise me if they came back with essentially the same team.
And I agree, and I think that their thinking has even changed through this.
It has to, right?
Yes, it has to have. Has to have. So even they're surprised. So you think this series is as good as over?
No, I didn't say that.
Okay, well,
I mean, I think
is this series as good as over?
I think the Celtics will win the series. I definitely think that at this point.
And how many games, Chris? Give us a prediction. Come on.
Yeah, Jimmy Stewart demands hard predictions.
Yeah, predictions. Celtics in six.
So they win in Cleveland to wrap it up.
So it's all but over.
They yes, they can win. They can win in Cleveland to wrap it up. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Good job, Chris.
They're capable of that.
To me, it's hard to predict because
by then the shutdown factor will be in effect.
So, like, to me, that's what makes it hard to predict. Like, how I think Cleveland's a bunch of dogs and gutless. How big and gutless dogs are they?
Pretty big.
To the point where
we're talking Clifford the Big Red Dog. Like, that's what we're talking. We're talking gigantic, gutless dog.
To the point that they would do at home what they did here. Oh, really?
I don't know, man. That roster is... J.R. Smith looks like Operation Shutdown has already been in effect for quite a while.
He's been like that for about 3 years.
He's been brutal in this series. Absolutely brutal in this series. And then, you know, just having to rely on... I mean, the other night with Jeff Green in a crunch time lineup.
Oh, my God,
like,
Jeff Green.
What are you doing? And so, then he had that egregious turnover.
Well, what about some of the questionable coaching? Like, Kyle Korver was one of their better offensive players in the first half of that second game. And then he... basically sits his ass on the bench for the whole second half.
Yeah, and I think he was concerned. I think Ty Lue was concerned about the defensive ramifications of Korver being in there. The thing was, then he put J.R. Smith back in, who was awful in that game. I mean, the Celtics shot 8 of 12 when he was the primary defender. Jaylen Brown, when defended by J.R. Smith, was 5 for 5 and 2 for 2 from three-point range for 12 points when primarily defended by J.R. Smith. And Smith kept breaking down their defense with these half-hearted switches and lethargic closeouts. And I thought Tristan Thompson made comments after the game about we need to communicate more and it takes multiple efforts on defense. I mean, I thought he was talking specifically about J.R. Smith. He didn't mention him by name, but it was pretty obvious if you watched the game who kept breaking down their defense.
So this is why I think it's hard to predict, because is J.R. Smith going to pull that crap at home with LeBron's exit on the line? Like, that's sort of hard to predict. I think he's a gutless loser, but for all four games... at home?
I'd sit his ass. I would. I'd sit his ass. Because you know what? Their defense is going to suck no matter what. So, like, they just don't have the players on defense to be good at it. If they're going to win, they're going to need to make shots.
All right, we'll go back to your phones with Gasper in studio here on a Agenda-Free Friday, which is brought to you by our friends at Planet Fitness. The world judges they don't. PlanetFitness.com.
Felger and Mez. The Sports Hub. Felger and Mez.
I love it.
You were right, Mez.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
One team showed up, the other team didn't. The Boston Celtics showed up ready to play. Obviously, the Cleveland Cavaliers had some time off, but the bottom line is it was an embarrassing performance by Cleveland. The greatest player in the world right now, who walked into this series averaging 34-9-9, was virtually non-existent all afternoon long. Boston, on this particular afternoon, did whatever they wanted, when they wanted, how they wanted. They abused the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Rozier wide open, cuts it in. A three-pointer for Terry Rozier.
The Cavs defense has been absolutely awful.
You got to rotate. You can't just stand in the lane and hope someone misses. This isn't a back-to-back. This isn't a back-to-back in two different cities.
It's either James or Love is supposed to rotate. They choose neither guy. Send a 12-pack to Ty Lue for having to watch that film tonight. He's going to need it. Because he might get... if you have to beg your guys to give effort like on those plays when it's not going good, you're hoping against hope. Like, there should be no question about your effort.
They've got to be embarrassed. He's more passionate about
their lack of energy and effort than they seem to be.
The Cavs eye roll each other more than a couple in a bad marriage. I think Boston's clearly the better team. There's no shame in losing to a better team. They owe themselves, if this is the end of this four-year run together, to do it the right way. Like, stay together, fight as hard as you can. If you can turn it and win four or five, go to the finals, great. And even if you can't, feel good about how you went about losing in the Eastern Conference Finals.
So again, that remains the big question. The Cavs hearing it from everybody. National guys, the broadcasters. Basically calling them out for quitting. What do they do when they go home? We continue with your thoughts, Chris Gasper in studio. Joe in Brockton, what do you got, Joe?
Hey, how's it going? Great show for the most part. I just wish the media would get one thing a little better as far as starts with national media mostly, but otherwise too. Where the way it's framed and presented is mostly like a lot of LeBron is tanking on purpose and not putting in the effort. And how Cleveland, what Cleveland is not doing and not what the Celtics are doing. And the Celtics defense has everything to do with the way they rotate, the way they switch, everything the way they do with breaking the will of Cleveland. And that's all I have to say on that.
They played great on defense, but I think even the Celtics admitted after game one, and I know the Cleveland staff went back and counted the amount of uncontested threes Cleveland missed. I think it was a dozen.
Yeah, that they missed, right.
And so, yes, the Celtics are playing fantastic basketball. They're playing with more force, more energy, more efficiency than the Cavaliers. There's no question about it. They've pressed the Cavaliers, and the Cavaliers haven't responded. However, you do have to acknowledge what you're seeing or not seeing, really, from the Cavaliers. And I don't think that takes away from the Celtics. That's just the reality of the series.
Thank you.
In the first two games.
Are the Celtics 25 points better than LeBron James and the Cavaliers?
No, they've missed shots. And then again, I told you, I gave you the three-point numbers the other day. Other than Love, Korver, and LeBron, 3-for-21 from three-point land. You and I could shoot that. We could.
I think I'd be better than that. I actually do.
I know. Individually, if you let me take it 21 times, I'm making more than three.
Marty and Brockton on Robert Parrish on Brad Stevens. Go ahead, Marty.
Yeah, I'd like to comment more on what you were saying in regards to Don Nelson and Casey Jones, and then another small comment on Brad Stevens and Doc Rivers.
Just quickly.
First, yes?
Go, please, oh? Quickly. Yes, go.
Yes. Well, I don't like the idea that you said that Casey was putting ball back in the rack. And maybe that's true, but with all the stuff that those all-stars, Bird, McHale, Parrish, and that entourage, all the crap that they were pulling in the locker room, playing around and stuff, does take a coach has to know how to handle himself. And he didn't have to do much coaching, but he did have to be some sort of coach for them to respect.
Not really. Not really.
Bird ran the show.
He needed to pick up the balls after practice and make sure the bus ran on time to the airport.
Or tell the equipment guys to pick up the balls. I don't think he actually picked up the balls.
Robert, he told the ball boys to pick up the balls. That's what Casey Jones did. And he grabbed their coats on the way into the arena. Casey Jones. This all starts with Robert Parrish said something about Brad Stevens. Could you win something first before? And I said, well, Robert Parrish is no expert on coaching. He carried on in this documentary on NBC Sports Boston about how offended he was that people implied that Don Nelson was a better coach than Casey Jones during the 80s, to which the obvious answer with anyone with half a brain would say, yes, Don Nelson was a much better coach than Casey Jones. Casey Jones did squat. Don Nelson, again, had 1,335 career victories as a head coach in the NBA, coaching four or five different teams. I don't even have the playoff. He had took most of them to the playoffs. Like, whatever. Like, Casey Jones grabbed their coats on the way into the arena. I think Casey Jones coached Seattle for like half a year after he left Boston, something like
right.
That.
Yeah, sounds right.
Did you give me a break with that? Like, don't rewrite history.
Bird ran the team. I told you. Casey drew up a play in a game where they needed a bucket at the end, put it on the whiteboard. Bird leaned over with his hand, wiped off the whiteboard, and said, just give me the ball and shut up. I mean, that was it. It's really that simple. I don't know if he actually told him to shut up, but that's what he implied.
Casey Jones has actually told a story similar to that on some documentary.
I'm telling you, it's what happened. That's the way Bird ran the team.
And I don't mean to rag on Casey Jones. He's a real gentleman and a good guy and all of that. I just, please, Like, but I don't want to argue about something 20 years ago. Does Stevens, 30, 40 years ago, does Stevens get more credit than he deserves?
I don't think so, just because of... You look, the job of a coach is to get the most out of the players he has at his disposal, right? I think Brad does that as well as anybody in the league. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for that, and he gets a lot of credit for that. And I also look at it and say, okay, you know, championships, I get it. But there are coaches who are just sort of along for the ride. You know, and this is a guy who, not to bring the college aspect into it, but I will. I mean, he was at Butler and took two teams to the Final Four. You're not getting McDonald's All-Americans there. He's a difference maker as a coach, which is rare in basketball, and he is, and he deserves the credit for that. And you even listen to his own players talk about plays he draws up, the ability that he has to get the most out of them. How about the development of some of these guys? I mean, again, I was someone who did not think an NBA coach could have this type of impact, but when I look at, like, Evan Turner come here and play really, really well and then go somewhere else and be, eh. When I look at what Isaiah Thomas was able to do here, Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, it seems like whoever you hand him, he gets the most out of that guy, and that's ultimately what a coach is supposed to do when he does it really well. So he deserves that credit.
All aboard, Chris.
I'm telling you.
You brought this back, huh?
Yeah, he's got the...
Oh, man.
Could you ever imagine the train whistle look like that?
No.
A little piece of wood.
No, this... That's someone, not the actual someone train didn't whistle. Hang out the window of the train and when they're coming through the town, Felgren, go...
No, that was...
Everyone look out, the train's coming. No, it's they made it to make it sound like a train whistle.
Oh, that's not the actual train whistle?
No, the actual train whistle is attached to the side of the train. It's got a little lever. They pull down a chain and steam releases. And it makes... And it makes what kind of noise, Murray? What noise does it make? There you go.
All aboard!
Oh, I thought that was actually what they were blowing there.
No, this just replicates the sound.
That might be the funniest moment of the show.
Oh, it does it really well then. Well, no, see, I didn't realize. No, it sounded like the locomotive, like what? You sound like the little conductor on the platform. Oh, no, it's not giving me a little blow.
Rolling through Brighton here. Hold on, I got to hang out the window. Yeah, we're here, coming through.
Yeah, Tom Hanks and the Polar Express over here.
Look out, everyone, coming through Brighton. All aboard the Seas Train.
Wow. You're a man who's led a sheltered life.
Well, so maybe I haven't ridden very many trains. Fine.
Yeah, you look like a real public transportation
guy. You got
guy,
me.
Felger.
What's that, Chris? I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Max in the truck, go.
Oh, Jim Murray, you got me dying right now. I'm driving. I can't. I was out of pull over. I got the Celtics in five beating the Cavs, and then... Yeah, Tony, the Celtics are going to go on to the finals and beat the Warriors in six games.
Do you really want to bet? Do you really believe that, Max?
Want to bet?
Yeah, what do you want to bet?
That the Celtics will beat the Warriors?
Yeah, the Celtics will beat the Warriors.
Let's bet for charity. You let him go.
I'll let him go. I'm not going to let you carry. We'll do Warriors talk when this thing's over. There's a huge gap in between the series. We're going to have 10, 12 days to fill before we go to San Francisco. Like, so let's leave that for then, okay?
I'm starting my case of the Celtics being the Warriors as we speak.
That a boy, Jimmy. You work on that.
I don't know. I don't think the Celtics have an answer for the death lineup.
The coach.
Here's an update from Murray. You got to fill me in on this train whistle thing.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Every afternoon, Felger and Mass bring you the science of sports.
Stupid me.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
He has a mild case of carpal tunnel syndrome.
For what I know, David has played video games his whole life. It seems like Fortnite now is the one everybody's playing.
I like to play Fortnite forever, then blame my numb hand on the cold weather. Let's play Fortnite forever now. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I wanna play Fortnite forever. Until my hands go numb and I miss my next start. I wanna play Fortnite forever. As soon as we're off the plane, I fire up the Xbox. I wanna play Fortnite forever.
This is so fun. Come on, guys, you wanna join my plan? This is so much fun. Who wants to ditch where we can play Fortnite forever? JBJ, grab the sniper rifle. Stop camping, bro. That's cheap.
So, Gaffer, any thoughts on David Price since the whole Fortnite nonsense? 2-0, and he had a complete game last night.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he pitched really well, obviously, last night. It just, man, though, huh? You just couldn't get the shutout, could he? Just wasn't in the cards.
So, do you think that was a gag?
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not going to get on him about it. I'm going to say to you guys the same thing I said to Murray. And you know, Murray's elevated it to an art form, critiquing and criticizing this guy, and I love it. It's hysterical. But the reality is, if you don't want David Price on your team, you need to root for more nights like last night. Because the only way he's going to leave is if he pitches at a high level and he can prove he can stay healthy and go back out on that market and get money. And it doesn't have to be 4 years, 127. What if it's 5 years and 130? I think at this point, he's like that unhappy here and disappointed with this environment that he would move on. So if ultimately you're like, I don't like this guy, I don't want to root for this guy, I don't want him on my team, you actually need to root for more nights like last night, because otherwise he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I think no shot. Like, I think there's zero chance of him pitching that well, and then secondly, of him being able to get that on the open market. I just think they're porked.
Okay, how about How about this year? Did the Fortnite stuff motivate him, get his head screwed on straight? Have they ripped the headset off him, and has that focused him? Has the mild carpal tunnel syndrome diagnosis sort of eased his mind that it wasn't something worse because he's such a hypochondriac? What? Like, because since that whole thing sort of, you know, that little mini blow-up, he's pitched really well. So,
see, I didn't think he was as great in the first game as everyone's making it out to be now.
He's better than he had been.
Yeah, but what, 5 1/3 innings?
This is what I mean, though, but he was just borderline disastrous.
Yeah, last night was a notch up. There's no question. Last night was definitely better than he has been. But, like, I'm sort of with Murray, too. Crap team. Like,
well,
all of a sudden,
yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, he can pitch well against the bad teams. Great.
It's been
terrific.
That way. It's all low stakes. At least here, until he can do this in a game that's critical against the Yankees or Cleveland or Houston. They play the Washington Nationals later this year. If it's in one of those games, fine. Then I'll believe and maybe I'll shut up about this. Until now, please. This is fool's gold.
I mean, if you look at his really good starts this year, it's Tampa.
Ooh.
Tampa.
Oh.
You know, 5 innings against the Angels, they're pretty good. But then Oakland. Oakland's okay. They're not terrible, but they're not a real threat.
And then
he
blew
that.
The game late.
Yeah, that's right. He did. He gave up that home run.
And the Angels game, he didn't pitch that well. I think he walked 4 in 5 innings. He wasn't that great that night.
He gave up one earned run, but you're right. He did walk 4 in 5 innings.
Yeah, and they scored a bunch of runs for him.
But, I mean, to your point, it seems like the games that he has pitched well have been against teams that are not really threats to the Red Sox or contenders. And,
right.
And you wonder if that's just a coincidence or if that has something to do with his mental state.
Josh, in Somerville with the Red Sox thought last night. Hi, Josh.
Hey, guys. Talk to you guys a long time. I was listening to Eckersley's call last night on the David Price Superstar game. And I couldn't help but notice a couple color comments that he had to make. Not sure if you guys caught it or not, but in the early innings, Mookie Betts is up to bat. They were discussing the run he's been on. And he said, the game just comes so easy to him. And then that made me perk up. And then I thought maybe it was coincidence. In the seventh inning, he says again, after a strikeout by Price, he says, he's just makes pitching look so easy. And I have to feel like he was pretty much trolling Price last night, and I thought it was hilarious. Let you guys discuss.
So on the plane, you know, you remember the reports were, and Dan Shaughnessy,
right.
that Price made a comment to, yo, Eckersley, you know, must be nice to have the game be so easy for you, whatever it was. There was the word easy was used by Price to disparage Eckersley in his commentary.
And so there you go. There's Eck's subtle little way.
See, I thought Eck was careful. Last night.
I think he's been careful since.
Yes, no question. I mean, there was one ball early in the game. It was a dribbler out in front of the plate. Price went to get it, grabbed it, and as he turned to throw, the ball slipped out of his hands. And X said, you know, well, he made the right play. Would have been a great play, but, you know, the ball just slipped out. Like, totally laid off. And
they
call
it the Tim Wakefield.
he got Nesson.
Yeah. So, look, I mean, I do. I just wonder whether X has said, okay, fine, no problem. I'm playing it straight down the middle. That's it.
I don't want any.
Yeah, no problem. When this guy pitches, I'll just say exactly what happened, and that's it. No, you know, opining.
Unless it's negative, then I'll just won't say anything. He's just gonna.
Only the positive.
I don't want the trouble at this stage.
Right. Do you really think X gonna do that?
Yes,
now? You do.
Definitely
neutered.
Oh, totally. I don't,
because he's by far the most entertaining guy there.
By far the best.
I don't know if he's the best, but he's the most. I mean, I think Remy's really, really good, but I think X the most entertaining.
I think that Eck has no appetite for the back and forth. And I know that because he won't travel on the road because he's uncomfortable around the players. And he's uncomfortable around the players because he gets chirped. And he wants nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it. It's just the way he's wired at this stage of his career. I'm not going to waste my time going back and forth with these ball players. So, fine. You want me to shut up? I'll shut up. No problem. Like, that's how I feel he deals with it.
So I didn't hear the second comment about Price last night, but the monkey comment I heard about, you know, how he makes the game look easy.
But that's true.
Well, I was going to say, I just took it for face value. Yeah, Mookie does, man.
He really does.
Oh, my God. He's locked in. He's so good right now. It's ridiculous.
Albert in Rhode Island on Brad Stevens. Yes, Albert.
How's it going? Mike, in your everlasting battle.
Oh, God.
To Earth Green Team. No, just listen. To Earth Green Teamers and to try to put hockey on the same level above basketball in this country, which will never happen, you have gone to some really ridiculous lengths. But today, your newest length of stupidity is now any, and because you know there's other coaches too, any coach that has coached great players, today it's Casey Jones, so he coached Mikhail Bird in Paris, so he can't coach. So that means Pat Riley can't coach either, right?
I have no idea if Casey Jones can coach or not because he never got the chance to. He did nothing here, Albert. He was an empty suit.
Okay, so Spoelstra can't coach either, right? Because he coached LeBron and Wade.
To me, it feels like Eric Spoelstra was twice the coach of Casey Jones because Eric Spoelstra has actually done something with a team that doesn't have much talent.
You're being inconsistent. Now you take jabs at every NBA coach any chance you get because it's a players' league, which I will agree with.
Yeah,
you.
I don't think Spoelstra's anything special, but he's done more with less than Casey Jones ever did.
Okay, that's it today. But on another day, it'll be any other coach that sucks because they have good players.
I'm just responding to your direct comment. Eric Spoelstra has done more coaching than Casey Jones ever did in 8 years of his tenure. I mean,
okay, Pat Riley. Phil Jackson, what are you going to say when Brad Stevens, when he gets another great player and he wins a ring, is he not going to be the same quality?
Brad Stevens has done twice as much than Casey Jones ever did as a coach, as a Boston Celtic, Albert.
But so you're telling me it's not about championships then?
Not really. I don't know. I never mentioned championships.
Well, I thought it was. Everything in Boston is about championships, right? Titles, championships.
Again, you're bringing up something else I didn't say. I don't know what you're talking about with championships. I never mentioned championships with Casey Jones or Don Nelson or Brad Stevens.
Well, how do we generally validate a coach's career? We generally validate it by the amount of championships they win, right?
Well, you might. I didn't. I didn't say anything like that.
So we generally on this show.
Try again, Albert. Just go home and talk to yourself because you're bringing up arguments that no one ever said.
And Phil Jackson was overrated as a coach.
Yeah, of course he was. Never coached a team where he didn't have the dominant player in the league.
Of course
he
was overrated.
I think Red Auerbach was overrated as a coach.
And you would be the first to admit it?
Red.
Well, I don't know about that.
Red was a great GM.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He was picking the players. I mean, you have to give him credit for that.
But that's not the coach
I'm
part.
Just telling you what Red did. I keep bringing this up. Red got to a point where he said, I'm not needed here. You guys coach yourselves. And he let the players coach themselves, and they won twice. Red proved that, generally speaking, the NBA coach is useless.
Yeah, but he also there. I can't agree with you guys on that one. I mean, he sort of built a culture there. And he was responsible for that culture that allowed at the end for him to turn it over and players, and Bill Russell's a player coach, upheld and maintained that culture.
Yeah, but Red didn't think it was all about him as a coach. And he proved it by stepping aside and letting the players coach themselves.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't.
There's no greater example than that.
Sure, yeah. And you know, there's been a number of books, and the one he did with John Feinstein, you know, he talks about that sometimes coaches can overrate themselves, and it's about players. So there is some truth to that. But again, I think you're looking at the coaching as solely like X's and O's. I think there's an element there of building a culture, getting the most out of guys. It's like being a leader in any sort of organization, right? Putting people in a position where they feel empowered, where you can get the most out of them. Auerbach did all that stuff.
I do, and I agree with that. And I think Stevens is a rare difference maker. Like Chris, you said earlier, exactly. Yeah. Most of those guys don't make a difference. I think he does.
I mean, to me, the
just don't give me Casey Jones, please.
Look, I told you this last week. Stevens' greatest asset as a coach is the ability to get those guys to buy in.
Absolutely.
It's his personality. Like, that's his greatest asset as a coach. Phil Jackson, though, I'm not giving any ground on Phil Jackson. He had Jordan, Shaq, Kobe. Shut up already. Good God with Phil Jackson.
Yeah, oh, no, that definitely helped him.
No,
but again,
I don't mean you shut up.
But he was good. But again, here's where I would give Phil Jackson credit. He was very good at managing. It's sort of the Terry Francona, like I've always said, about the Red Sox job and what Francona did here. It's not so much about the strategy or the X's and O's. It's about creating a culture where guys can succeed. It's about managing and massaging the egos. Jackson was good at that.
And how about that, Albert? And what does Anis have to do with hockey? What does Anis have to do with hockey?
As soon as he called, I knew it was bad news.
Well, I could care less about hockey in the country. I only care about hockey in Boston, which, Albert, as big, if not bigger, than basketball in Boston, which is really all we care about. Long commercial-free segment is next.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Do you feel appreciated by them, and do they have the appropriate gratitude for what you have achieved?
I plead the fifth.
All right, so Gasper's boy Brady doesn't feel appreciated, so he's staying away from camp. Next week it ramps up, Chris.
Yeah, OTAs.
OTAs.
Feel the excitement.
Passing camps.
Yep.
Phase three.
Yeah.
He's never missed these in the past. Even when he was in L.A. and California, I think he came back for these. Yet the word on the street.
I want to see Gasper's answer here. Keep going.
From what he's told people.
Mads is creeping me out right
now. I guess
now.
Brady's, you know, made it clear he's not showing up for anything other than the mandatory stuff, which is June 5th to 7th. But these are passing camps. The offense meets every day with the coaches. Balls are out. Quarterbacks throwing to receivers and running backs against the defense. Not in pads, but, you know, actual passing camps.
It's good for timing and
he's always been here chemistry. For this stuff. I'd say every starting quarterback in the league.
Look at how smug he looks right
I'm
now.
I'm not saying. I haven't said a word.
Keep going.
I don't sense any smugness yet.
Oh, I do.
I'm going to open up the floor to Chris, and then I'm going to judge it independently.
And Felgie with no smugness. And if he doesn't sense any,
so
then
that
I'm good.
Turns into a shot on me, fine.
It's not a shot. I'm just saying.
Listen.
It's a fact.
I'm sure 31 other quarterbacks can be with their teams in this period. Brady's always been with the Patriots in this period, but presumably he's not. Do you think he's going to show up next week? Because I think he will.
I think if he, I would not be surprised if he missed the first set, you know, that goes to, I think, the 21st through the 24th.
That's right.
I think you miss that one, and maybe you sort of make your point when Brian Hoyer's running around out there and Danny Etling, and then you're at the next one. That's just my opinion, though.
Okay.
That's just my opinion.
Uh-huh.
That's just my opinion.
Gasper knows something.
I don't know anything. I don't know. I'm just saying, I think you sort of make your point by missing that mandatory, not mandatory. Of course, the whole thing is mandatory voluntary, but that's for another day. But you miss that first OTA and sort of make your point about how you feel and how you want your guy to have his access back and how you're feeling overall that, you know, you're not necessarily appreciated and that there's still a little fence mending that needs to be done. And then if you really miss any more than that, I think now it's a point where not only are you hurting the team, but you're probably hurting yourself. Because Tom's whole thing all along has been, you know, there is no Hall of Fame for contracts. It's about championships and all that stuff. If you're not showing up at this other stuff and letting somebody like Malcolm Mitchell work with you, or some of the new guys on the team work with you, like a Sony Michel or even a Jeremy Hill, then really you're sort of at that point, you're in a position where you're cutting off your nose to spite your face. You know, because now you're hurting not only the team, but you're hurting yourself and your legacy and what you ultimately want to accomplish when you play this season.
So to me, a big day is Tuesday because it's a media day. And it's all well and good for us to talk about Brady not being there to this point. We don't see it. You know, there's no film of it. There's no tape of Hoyer handing off to Etling.
Well, they put stuff on the website, but I know what you're saying.
You know, it's not covered the way we would cover it.
Yep.
And I don't know if Bill's going to be made available. Does Bill talk at these things usually?
Bill, I just saw the thing. Bill will be made available.
Okay, so we're all going to be out there, meaning the media, not me. I'm going to this thing. Yeah, the proverbial we. We're all the editorial we.
I'm not going.
No, you'll wait for the boat trip on Nantucket. Get your info there.
You are going to be there. Someone else out there. Murray's going to go out. I'm going
to
make
get
Murray.
To work down there, boy.
I'm going to go Murray.
All right, Mr. Felger. Sure, I'll get you that sound.
I need the stakeout. I want to know if they're practicing at Gillette and Brady takes a right and heads to TB12. That's what I want to know. I want to know if they're practicing in the bubble, but he goes and drives to Gillette. But instead of going to the bubble to practice with everybody else, he goes to Alex's place. Like, that's what I want the stakeout to see his car parked out.
Alex might come to him that day.
In front of TB12. I want to see the reporters do that. That's what Jimmy's playing that sound effect for. Like, I'm... whatever.
Cracking the whip on people.
Got
do
it. Okay.
My work for me.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Now I've lost my train of thought.
Sorry. You said you want the stakeout.
You want the stakeout.
I want the stakeout. Yeah. Brady not showing up to me is a story, and it's going to be a story on that Tuesday when all the media's there.
Yeah.
And we're asking Bill, where's Brady? And we're seeing Hoyer take all the reps and all that stuff. Like, for Brady to put that on Bill tells you where they're at. Because that's going to go right up that. Bill's got to deal with that crap
right,
on that day
Brady knows what that means.
Which is why he's going to do it. That's what I think.
Which is why he's going to cave.
I think that's why he's going to do it. Because Belichick has made his life miserable. Now he's going to make it miserable for Bill. We're working. We're going to work. We're going to help each other out here, Bill.
But this would sort of be, if he doesn't go to this first set, right? Or even if he just misses the first couple of days of it. To me, that's a classic sort of Brady half measure. You know, he's not going to go all the way and really sit out all these OTAs. But you sort of make your point, and then you show up for the other stuff and play football. Because, you know, his history is that he will embrace the confrontation up until a point. Up until a point where it becomes a distraction.
This is what I was talking about before.
Or it's something where he feels like it's going to materially affect his ability to win football games, and then he pushes away from the table. You know, he's never really taken one of these things to the wall.
This one feels different to me. And when I'm not saying to the wall.
He's not a to the wall kind of guy.
Okay, but again, to the wall
on this stuff.
Yeah, so to me, the wall would be skipping mandatory stuff. As long as this is, you know, legal, quote unquote, and within his right, then I think he's going to do it. I think he's still pissed. I do. I think he's still pissed at Bill. He thinks Bill's a pain in the ass.
That's not the debate.
Well,
of course he's pissed.
And he's going to hang Bill out for a few days here and let the world see it.
If Brady misses this week, Chris, I think he's changed more than I thought. Like, he's unrecognizable to me. He would be unrecognizable to himself. Balls are out. Offense, defense, coaches on the field, meetings in the morning. He's available. He's there. And he's not going to show. Like, I mean, I just sort of picture Brady waking up in the morning looking at himself and say, there's football practice today, and I'm what?
I'm
doing what?
Yeah, it's a good point. I think in fairness, in one way, I think he's sort of stuck between two real taskmasters here. You know, on the one hand, there's the family life and the pull of that. On the other hand, there's the pull of Bill, and I think there's two people there, two very powerful personalities he's between that want his absolute commitment and fealty there, and it's not possible.
Well, then, Giselle, you know what? Then that's bugging the crap out of me, too, then. He's allowed to go to football practice, G. He's got to go to work. You know, y'all got to work. So he's got to get... It's practice. Let him go to practice. Don't bust his balls about going to practice. It's only 2 weeks of it. Like, that... you just conjured up a conversation probably hasn't happened, but it's bugged me.
Oh, I'm sure that's happened.
Oh, that's so aggravating.
Murray's cool with it.
You have to play this game all the time during the fall, 4 or 6 months. How much? And you have to do it in the spring and the summer, too? More practice?
Oh, I can't stand that.
Gotta go.
That's his life.
They need me early. 3 hours early? Yep. Yeah. Gotta get worked on. Gotta go. See you later tonight. Poor guy.
Murray, would you be disappointed if he shows up next week?
A little bit, yeah. I would be, honestly.
Oh,
yeah.
Maz, you'd be devastated.
I would be. Yeah, no, I'd be destroyed. Yeah, I want the scandal. I want the fight. I want Paul and John going at it publicly. That's what I want.
No, he's showing up. So, Chris, you're right about his half measures. The half measures end Monday when OTAs begin. Monday, and then Tuesday, the media's there, and we see him there, and he doesn't take any farther than that. That's it, I think. Unless G keeps him in Brazil. He's in Brazil now. So one way to...
Well, what's Zoe saying?
Zoe says he's not coming until June.
So I don't know about Zoe, but my people that I talk to say he's told people it's only June 5 to 7 and nothing else. And he's not the only one who said that. Other people that are... And I don't know who's reported what, so I don't want to like out people, but
yep.
Maybe people have reported this or not, but the reporters that I've talked to, not on the air, have said he's made it clear he's not coming for anything other than 5 to 7.
Oh, Zoe didn't say on the air that he's not coming until June?
That's what I'm saying. I don't know if Zoe said this or not on the
air. Oh, I thought he did, but maybe I'm wrong.
He did now, Maz.
Prank call.
So I feel like that could be his goal and his aim. I think it's going to be hard to execute.
Exactly my point. He'll cave. Chris, thanks for coming in. We appreciate it.
Good to see you guys.
We have Gasper and Murray tomorrow morning?
We do not. We have Gasper and Hardy. So that's on you. I'm off for the weekend.
That'll be fun. We'll still have a good show. We'll talk a lot about the Celtics. We'll talk a little bit about this with Brady, and I'm sure we'll delve a little bit into the Red Sox and David Price.
Awesome. Wait a minute, Murray. You're off this weekend?
Yeah, I'm going to New York.
What kind of shape's he going to be out?
We're not expecting much on Monday.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.